Welcome to another edition of Stark Raven on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO 102.7 FM.
On Stark Raven, we delve into issues of imprisonment and criminalization.
My name is Emily Aspinwall.
And I'm Tiffany Chong. We're here tonight with our technical operator, Louise Croft.
In honor of International Migrants Day, in this edition of Stark Raven, we're going to be taking a closer look at how the Canadian government is treating some migrants here in Canada.
National security certificates have been imposed on 5 Muslim men. These men have been held without charge for years. Nor they nor their lawyer are able to see the evidence used to uphold these certificates.
And these certificates cannot be applied to Canadian citizens. They're applied only under Canada's refugee and immigration laws.
3 of these men are fighting their deportations from behind bars of a specially constructed prison in Kingston. They are currently on hunger strike, protesting their conditions of detention.
The other 2 men are being held on extremely strict bail conditions.
In the next hour, we look at the conditions of confinement for those being held under the guise of national security.
We also have news tonight, more on how Florida is putting a temporary halt on executions, update on Six Nations political prisoners, and a notorious Jordanian prison closes. All that and more is in our news section.
And find out what's happening around town during our community event listings at the end of the show.
So stay tuned to Stark Raven in the next hour here on your community station, CFRO 102.7 FM. Here in Canada, 5 Muslim men are being detained without charge. Neither they nor their lawyers are able to see the evidence against them. The 5 are being held on national security certificates under Canada's immigration law. All 5 are currently fighting deportation. They argue that they'll be tortured if they're returned to their country of origin. For the second time this year, 3 of the men have gone on hunger strike to protest the conditions of detention. Mohammed Majoub, Hassan Almri, and Mahmoud Jabala are being detained at the new Kingston Immigration Holding Center. This prison was built specifically for people being held on national security certificates. Matthew Behrens works with the Campaign to Stop Secret Trials in Canada. The campaign has been advocating for these men and their right to due process for several years. Matthew joins me from his home in Toronto. Welcome to the show, Matthew. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me on tonight.
So why have these men, why have they gone on hunger strike?
Well, the conditions at the Kingston Immigration Holding Center, which, for lack of a better term, we're just going to call Guantanamo Bay North, continue to deteriorate. As you pointed out, these are guys who are being held indefinitely without charge. They have no end date to that detention. And their daily lives are quite miserable. And right now, one of the biggest concerns is the fact that Mr. Majoub, who has hepatitis C and high blood pressure, both of which are very serious conditions, is being denied medical treatment. What has happened is the men are requesting that when they go from what's known as the living unit to the administration building for healthcare purposes, that they be accompanied by a supervisor, because there's been some problems with the guards there, and they don't feel safe going without a supervisor. And instead of bringing the injection and bringing the medication to Mr. Majoub in the living unit, the healthcare staff is saying, no, you have to come to the administration building. Mr. Majoub is saying, I don't feel safe doing that, so therefore he's gone without his medication since September the 2nd. So that's just one of many complaints that the men have. There are other complaints centered around the fact that there's no independent grievance procedure there. If the men have a problem with what's going on, they are forced, especially as individuals whose first language is not English, to write out lengthy complaint forms, which are then turned into the staff, and the staff determine whether or not the complaints have legitimacy. So there's no independence in speaking up for those men. So they feel very strongly that they need a grievance procedure put in place which is independent, kind of like an ombudsperson, and they also need a translator there because they're struggling to get their points across, and the rules keep changing from day to day. So they have felt now that they have to go on hunger strike, not only for Mr. Majoub's health, but for their long-term safety at the facility.
So I'm curious how the conditions there compare to their previous conditions, because before this, they were held in provincially run detention centers for many years. And how do the conditions from the prisons they were held at before compare to this new immigration holding center?
Well, when they were held at provincial facilities, for example, they had no restrictions whatsoever on phone calls. Now, whenever they want to make a phone call, the individual they call has to be approved. They have to put in a request for that phone call, and it's at the discretion of the guards who then dial the call. And, for example, when they were at Metro West Detention, they were able to call the media and let them know what was going on with their lives. Right now, if they want to call the media have to apply, and then the detainees have to apply on behalf of the media, goes through the bureaucracy, and then they have to go to the administration building, which they can't do right now because of safety issues. So basically they're cut off from the media. And when media are brought into the facility, and that's only happened on two very specific occasions, guards sit in the room. So it has a chilling effect on the ability to speak freely to the media. So that's a major concern. It's 2.5 hours away for the family members of the detainees, so it's much more difficult to visit. They are not given the same opportunities as other federal detainees at Millhaven, who, for example, if they have family, can apply for and receive a 3-day trailer visit and spend 3 days together with their family, cooking, playing, sleeping together. These men are denied that. They're kind of in a legal black hole in which they're told they're federal detainees, but they don't even have the same rights as individuals who've been tried and convicted in court.
Yeah, because I know that Hassan Elmery was on strike when he was in the Metro West Detention Center, and one of the things he was demanding was some of the rights of a federal prisoner. Has he been able to gain any of those rights?
No, and part of the problem is when he brought an application to court, it took place last October, and one of the arguments that the government was making at the time was, we're building a new facility for these guys, all their problems will be taken care of, so there's no need for this court case to proceed. And it was on that basis that the court dismissed the application for an improvement of his conditions in Toronto. And now, of course, that he's in Kingston, he's got to start this process all over again. So his lawyers and the lawyers for Mr. Majoub and Mr. Jabala are also looking at court action sometime in the new year. But in the meantime, they continue on hunger strike. It's day 24 for Mr. Majoub. It's day 12 for Mr. Jabala and Mr. Elmery. And what we're hoping is that people across the country will be pestering their member of parliament to raise this as an issue and to say, first and foremost, these security certificates under which the men are being held are illegal, they're unconstitutional, and they must be abolished. And secondly, ultimately, these guys, although we want to improve their conditions of detention, ultimately we want them out on bail. They've done nothing wrong. There's never been anything on the public record to say this is what they've done.
Yeah, I'm curious about, you mentioned they kind of fall in a bit of a legal black hole. Is that because, in terms of their conditions of imprisonment, is that because the Immigration Holding Center is run by the Canadian Border and Security people and not by the Correction Service of Canada? Like, they're not considered actual federal prisoners? Or
well, part of the problem is the facility is run by the Canadian Border Services Agency, but they actually have staff from Corrections Canada. And when you talk to the people at the facility, they say, well, we have to follow certain rules because they're Corrections Canada staff who are involved. And then you say, well, who do I speak to at Corrections Canada? You call Corrections Canada, and they say, well, that facility is run by the Canadian Border Services. So it's a bureaucratic nightmare, and it goes back and forth, back and forth. And what the men are saying is that the rules keep changing on a day-by-day basis. For example, there was one day when the family of Mr. Majoub went up to visit, and they were sitting in the very uncomfortable visiting area, which basically has a McDonald's-style table, so you can't even move the chairs. And they're being watched at all times by the guards, and the family wanted to have some bottled water. And they were not allowed to have any. They weren't allowed to bring any in. And Mr. Majoub's wife, Mona El Fouli, said she was feeling dizzy, and the guard said, well, go drink water out of the bathroom. And she says, I'm not comfortable doing that. So even on that level, something so simple as providing someone a drink of water is suddenly turned into this major national security issue. And it's those kinds of just petty bureaucratic issues which are, you know, certainly part of the daily grind in any prison environment. But here you have 23 staff, including 7 supervisors and 12 guards, for 3 men. And they do things like have head counts throughout the day. There's only 3 men in this isolated facility, and yet they are stopped and told to stand to attention for head count. And the men, that's another one of their demands on the hunger strike, that this just be ended. It's utterly ridiculous when you're sitting in a glass booth watching these men, and then you come out of the booth and say, okay, stand to attention so I can count all 3 of you.
Is there any legal proceedings that have gone forth in terms of trying to challenge some of those conditions of detention and that sort of legal black hole in terms of their rights as prisoners?
Well, there's been a number of actions going back to 2003 when Hassan Al-Mrae was on hunger strike from solitary confinement trying to get the heat turned on in his cell in the middle of a Canadian winter in Toronto, as well as to win a pair of $2 slippers for his feet. We won that case, but Hassan had to go on hunger strike for over 40 days at that time. But other court challenges have been met with the court saying it's not in our jurisdiction or there's nothing we can do about it. And so we're going to possibly be facing those same hurdles once again. And in the meantime, there's other court decisions which will be coming down in the new year which also might affect all of this, including the Supreme Court, which heard a challenge to the whole security certificate regime over 2 days in June, and we expect their decision sometime in the first 2 months of 2007. And that might have some kind of effect on how court proceedings go forward as well.
And the fact that maybe there's no sort of instant legal solution to this might reinforce the fact that people who are concerned about this issue, public support may be even more important. Do you want to tell us what you're asking people who are interested and concerned about this issue to do?
Well, we are calling for nationwide protests and vigils between January 11th and the 15th. We've picked the 11th in solidarity with U.S. groups who are calling on that day. It's the 5th anniversary of the opening of Guantanamo Bay Detention Center in Cuba to close that facility. And January the 15th is Martin Luther King Day. And so between those 4 days, which include 2 weekend days, we're hoping that people will hold vigils and public demonstrations in support of the rights of the men who are currently detained and also calling on the federal government to end all deportation proceedings, since these 5 men face deportation to torture. And even though that's completely against the law, in terms of international agreements that Canada has signed, the government is continuing its efforts to deport these men to torture.
There was just a ruling last week or the week before on the case of Mohammed Majoub about his possible deportation to Egypt. Can you tell us more about the ruling in that case?
Well, essentially what happens is the federal government goes through a process now under the security certificate in which they do what's known as a balancing act. They look at the risk of severe harm coming to an individual, and then they're supposed to, quote-unquote, balance that against what they allege is the threat to security that is allegedly posed, even though that's completely based on secret evidence. And in all of these cases, the conclusion of the government and human rights groups and others is these guys face torture, and then they balance that against what they believe against these guys. And the conclusion has often been, even though they face torture or death if they're sent back to their countries of origin, we've got to send them back anyway. And so these decisions have been judicially reviewed by the federal court and often found to be wanting. So they're sent back to the government for a new determination. So the first time this happened with Mr. Majoub, he was found to be at risk of torture, but send him back anyway. The government decision was the subject of a court review that found this decision to be patently unreasonable, unlawfully made, and in fact perverse. So what did the government do the second time? They came to the conclusion that he wouldn't face torture and should be sent back. And so a decision came out from the federal court last Friday which said, how can you say that? The evidence is overwhelming that this guy will face torture. So the decision goes back again. So about a year from now, we'll probably get a third decision which says, okay, you're right, he will face torture, but we have to send him back anyway. And this is part of the ongoing psychological torture against these men and their families, in which they're constantly playing games in their attempt to kind of get around Canada's international legal commitment never to deport someone to torture. So the decision is an important one because, first of all, it buys Mr. Majoub some time, and it also gives the federal government notice that you can't easily dismiss the fact that Egypt and Syria and Algeria and Morocco, that these are countries that systematically torture individuals, especially individuals who have been named justly or unjustly as threats to security by the Canadian government.
Yeah, it seems that these men go through a lot of legal battles. I mean, Mohammed Majoub has been held for almost 7 years without charge, and it, as you described, his case continues to be before the court. And it does sound like a very challenging thing for them to deal with. And also, how do you know when it's going to end or where it's going to end?
We don't know when it's going to end, and that's the scary thing about this. It's been going on, as you said, for almost 7 years in Mr. Majoub's case. But the thing that's really, you know, hopeful for me is how patient these guys are. I mean, I can't imagine, you know, going through 6 days of this, much less 6 years. And, you know, people like Mr. Majoub, Mr. Jabala, Mr. Almre, they remain very humble and peaceful people who say, well, what can we do? We will continue speaking up for our rights and the rights of our families, and we know a mistake has been made here. We're not happy with it. But they haven't resorted to anything even remotely connected to violence or retribution. They keep saying, we have faith in the Canadian people. And there are people across the country who write to them on an ongoing basis and who have demonstrated, and that gives them a lot of hope. They still say, you know what, Canada is the best country in the world. We've got some problems with the legal system, but this is where we want to live. We came here seeking refuge and seeking safety, and we know that one day we're going to find it. We just need a few more people to speak up in solidarity with us, and hopefully that day will soon come. Even if they're released on bail, as you're probably well aware, Mr. Harkat and Mr. Shirkawi are on incredibly restrictive bail programs, which are essentially house arrest. These men will also be subject to that. So once they get out of Guantanamo Bay North, they're still going to be facing very, very severe restrictions on their liberty for many years to come. So it's something that, you know, hopefully those who are concerned about human rights will see that this is a really long-haul struggle, and we've got to continue speaking up about it because the issue is not going away.
So what are they demanding? And what is the campaign against secret trials demanding? An end to the national security certificate, for this evidence to go and be presented in court and argued out?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, we're saying that you can't reform a system which is so fundamentally flawed and unfair as the security certificate regime, because every time you ask in court, what's the evidence on the public record that these guys have done anything wrong or are associated with something wrong, they say, we don't have anything on the public record. It's all secret. And if the only people seeing that are the judge and the witnesses from CSIS and the government lawyers, you have absolutely no opportunity whatsoever to defend yourself. It's not a fair proceeding. So what we're suggesting is that these guys, and all people who might be subject to similar procedures, be granted equality rights. If you're a Canadian citizen and you're considered a threat, you're charged under the criminal code, as 17 guys were charged earlier this year in Toronto. They know what the charge is. They know a little bit of what some of the evidence is against them. We're actually going to see how far that's going to go once these cases come to trial. But these men deserve that same right. And we're also calling for an end to deportations against not only these men, but an end to deportations, period, because this idea that the Canadian government should have the power after 10 years to pick somebody up and say, you know what, your paperwork was screwed up. It's time for you to go back to another country where you haven't lived for 10 years. It's tearing communities apart, and we saw that with Portuguese workers earlier this year in Toronto when there were major sweeps of construction sites, and we're seeing it on a daily basis. There's over 10,000 people being deported from this country every year, and there's no social purpose served by this. What it does is it terrorizes the community and it keeps people living in fear, and it's completely unfair.
Well, thanks very much for speaking with us this evening, Matthew.
Thanks so much.
Matthew Behrens works with the campaigns to stop secret trials in Canada. And if you want to reach the campaign, you can call them at 416-651-5800. That's 416-651-5800. And for more information on the security certificate prisoners and the fight against national security certificates, you can check out their website. It's www.homesnotbombs.ca. You're listening to Stark Raven here on Co-op Radio, CFRO 102.7 FM. In a couple moments, we'll be back and we'll be talking to Sophie Harkat. She is the wife of Mohammed Harkat, who is, Matthew mentioned, is out on really strict bail conditions. So we'll be talking about with her about his bail conditions and the conditions of their house arrest. So stay tuned to Stark Raven.
Before the earth, and did you know my eyes are windows to the world? Did you know you can't go as I am and I wear cherry curls? Can't tell the boys from the girls. Your body's just a vehicle transporting your soul. It's what's inside of people, this beauty to behold. Fear not of evil. Every day them flesh it grows. Changes of the times take a toll.
Quality as it was written in the book of life, then sociality me want to pick up Marcus Garvey, and we make up you with me, me no want no partiality in me reality.
I can see it in the signs, every day I live, it's clear to my mind, something got to give. The system is the problem, but it ain't just gonna change. The people got to fight, it's one to break free from the chains. We living in a time where whitey got us cornered, shackles on the brain, police on every corner, looking for some soldiers, but they so hard to find. My elders say be patient, cause things come in time.
Not fast enough because y'all the one for me right mystery. I made it motherland of mystery. Cause we too strong for them to this week. Because it wasn't, now it is, and it would definitely be. But no, the days is up, blaze the top. African warrior, raise the top, push it up, fill up your cup. We had enough, we're gonna buck. Now is the time, open your mind, then you will find it's a design. No matter what you do, no one can stop the time. No, I know KKK, no CIA, no brutality. Ghetto roots and RBGs, we riding for liberty. Been here before the start, still here after it's over, and it's written in the heart of every soldier.
I walked in the court today and saw a gold fringe on the flag. It reminded me of old cinch body bags. Of all my relations, now just ashes and patience and isolation stations, observation nation, population vaccination, pinpoint evacuation. As we enter winter doors like Civil War chess pieces, swivel your test thesis against my mind clutter manifesto. As friends die, rewrite your plans to Modesto. Desto is an orchestral depresso with the power to presto and escrow. Martial law will harsh us all. Martial law will harsh us all. Martial law will harsh us all. Other same mosh militias versus our brainwashed brothers and sisters. I hate this shit. We're on the wrong team. So long to strong dreams, strung along the song streams. More than magically suspicious, chronologically fictitious. Mainstream multimedia militias. Satellite dishes, sat in the light as 3-eyed cattle fight vicious. Fuck MP3 and the DMV. This is World War III and I'm word worthy. Hurling through space, I came here just a bit early to face all of my fears have been strategically placed. The fall of the deer has been logistically erased. And yet, one deer stands, and yet one deer heart races through the land, traces through the sand. Alarming, the foreign horses. Disarming the armed forces. The Marines will smother your dreams. The Air Force doesn't care for you, of course. The Navy will put you in the grave, G. The Army will harm thee. The military will kill and bury.
What are you talking about?
You know, most people don't even know that we're under martial law right now.
My brother is a Marine.
All the armed forces.
This song is stupid. What are you talking about? No, fuck you.
And that was Martial Law by Mind Clouders. And before that, you heard It Was Written Remix by Damian Marley with Dead Prez. You're listening to Co-op Radio, CFRO 102.7 FM, and this is Stark Raven. Mohamed Harkat is a refugee from Algeria. He's been held under a national security certificate since December 2002. This means that he's being held without charge. Neither he nor his lawyers are able to see the evidence against him. Because of the security certificate, Mohamed spent 3.5 years locked up in Provincial Detention Center in Ottawa. In June 2006, he was released on bail. The conditions of his bail have been described as some of the strictest in Canadian history. He is also under threat of deportation to Algeria, where he says he will be tortured if he is sent back. Mohamed was released on bail and is under house arrest in Ottawa, where he lives with his wife Sophie and her mother. Sophie Harkat joins us on the phone from her home in Ottawa. Thanks for being with us this evening, Sophie.
You're welcome.
What is life like for you and Mohamed under the imposed bail conditions?
Well, like you mentioned in the description, it is the toughest bail package in Canadian history. Some of the conditions you didn't mention include my husband wearing a GPS bracelet, being monitored 24 hours a day. Both my husband and myself are under house arrest because I have to supervise him inside the residence and outside. When he steps in the yard between 8 a.m. and 9 p.m., I have to be with him. And when he steps in the house, I have to be with him as well. We can only go out 3 times a week for up to 4 hours. So that means a maximum of 12 hours per week. All the locations and the people that we meet have to be pre-approved. The people entering our residence have to be pre-approved. Our mail, our phone is intercepted. We're followed by CBSA officers, that's the Canadian Border Service Agency, on all of our outings. And we find that the most difficult part of all is being followed. We have no privacy whatsoever. My husband has to report to CBSA calling before and after outings. There's 23 conditions in total. A large chunk of money had to be put down as surety money in case he were to break his condition, and a large cash donation had to be made as well to the federal court. It's been very difficult for us. It doesn't describe the feeling of having Mo at home. It almost erases what I've gone through the past 3.5 years, but you know that the conditions are so difficult. And the more and more we live with those conditions, the more and more we find them difficult. We find them, they are against all principles in Canada. They are a violation of our rights. And so I never thought that the condition package would be that difficult to accept, because we did put a very tough package on the table, but it ended up being tougher when we got it back, actually. The judge added some responsibilities and some conditions. So it is very, very difficult. It's hard to describe.
You spent the 3.5 years that he was in prison fighting to get him out on bail. How has it been different for you when he was in prison and now that you're both under these conditions?
It's very different. We're still under stress. It's hard. We've been apart for 43 months and now we're together full time all the time. So we've had to adjust. I enjoy spending time with my husband. I just love having him around. It doesn't describe the hell I had to go through for 3.5 years, because at the end I was visiting him at the Kingston Detention Center, so I had to travel all the way, take the bus in the middle of the winter to go visit him only twice a week for 20 minutes. We had no contact visit for 3.5 years. We only got 2 visits of 20 minutes behind a window and with a phone. There's no comparison of what I've gone through 3.5 years and what I go through now. Except that now we can go through it together. But like you mentioned, we are both under house arrest. It's very, very difficult for me because my mother is the only other surety right now, and she works full-time, and so she cannot come and supervise him all the time so I can go out. So my campaign has taken, I've gone down quite a bit. I've been silenced because we've been denied outings. We cannot go at rallies together. Some of the rallies I've organized for my husband, we cannot attend. We cannot attend conferences, which our own lawyer gives. So the CBSA has had control over me, and I really don't like it. Like I said, it's a total violation of our rights, and it's unacceptable that people in Canada live this way. We feel like animal on a leash. Nobody has ever been treated like that in Canada, I don't think.
So I know that Adil Shikari is also out on bail. Are his bail conditions comparable to that of Mohammed and yours?
No, they're not even close to what we have. His bail package, although it's very difficult, is a lot more open. For example, he's allowed to go out between, I believe, 7 a.m. to 10 p.m. at night. And he doesn't have to tell CBSA where he's going, who he's meeting, and all that. We have to give the name and location of everywhere we're going to go and every person we're going to meet outside. And sometimes you just happen to cross someone you don't know, as part of an outing, and people recognize my husband and I when we're on outings, and they approach us to say hi. He's got some very similar conditions. For example, he cannot associate with people related to the terrorism network or people we know or we ought to know has a criminal record, that same thing. But he needs to be supervised on outings by his mother or his dad. But he's got a little more freedom, but it's still very difficult for him. And his mother, very, very hard on his mother's health. And I know she's had some difficult times the past, I believe he's been on bail for about 1.5, 2 years. He had to set an example for us. We have to set an example for the other guys who might come out on bail soon as well. But I don't wish that package on anybody. I don't wish bail on anyone, because my husband doesn't even have a charge. He was never criminally charged with anything. He doesn't. And if you compare what other criminals in Canada, they have more freedom than my husband. People who've killed people have better bail packages than us. My husband's never been charged, and we don't know the allegation. Sorry, we don't know the charges against him. We know nothing on his case.
So what is the status before the courts of his case? Where is it at?
Well, we're currently waiting for the Supreme Court decision, which might come down any day now or in early 2007. They will rule on the constitutionality of the use of security certificate. So if they decide the certificate is unconstitutional, then the government has 1 year to redraft a whole new law, and hopefully we'll get a new trial after a whole year. So, I mean, we're going to go through this hell all over again with possibly an amicus curiae, which is a third-party lawyer, which cross-examined the evidence that CSIS claimed they have, very similar to what Mayor Arar has. If they find it constitutional, I don't know where this will go from now. I think there will be pretty much the end of the road for us. You know, we haven't seen the light of the tunnel, you know, for the past 3.5 years. We feel very confident that the Supreme Court will rule in our favor because of all the recent decisions made by Judge O'Connor and all the other federal cases. For example, there's a big case in Ottawa here, which is the first person to be detained under the NTERS legislation. There's been some progress. And so we're waiting for that. And my husband today got the news that his deportation has been put on hold. There will be a judicial review of his deportation because, for those of you who don't know what that is, the minister's delegate made a decision that he should be deported, even though he will face torture because of the allegation he has in Canada. And so the government has decided to hear the arguments in front of a federal court. So that was one of the positive decisions we got today. So, but he's still under threat of deportation, just like the other men, and we feel stressed and we feel anxious every day, and it's like a roller coaster of emotion. And it's just been very, very difficult for myself, for my family, for everyone. It's unbearable.
So you did mention Meher Arar. I'm just curious what you think the impact of that report and all the publicity around it might have on your case.
I think it all came down at a good time. Obviously, I feel for Mr. Arar and for the for all, everything that he's gone through. Fortunately, I think this will set a good example of how incapable the CSIS and the RCMP and those who investigate these kind of cases are. So this might shed some light in some of the security certificate cases. But it's two different things. I mean, he's a Canadian citizen. These men are refugees or immigrants, and they're not being treated the same way. They don't have the same rights. Basically, they're treated like garbage, because if in Canada you have a citizenship, then you're treated better than people with immigrant status. If you have an immigrant status, you're treated better than a refugee. If you're a refugee, you're treated better than a non-status. And if you're non-status, then you have no rights at all in Canada. So, you know, the way these men are being treated is totally different. Although Mr. Arar has gone through torture, this is what these guys are facing if they go back to their country. So I'm hoping all this will bring some positive things, and maybe in the Supreme Court decision. Hopefully the Supreme Court will have enough brains to realize the impact it has on national security issues. So we'll see.
Yes, so at this point you're just waiting for that Supreme Court decision and go from there.
That's pretty much what our lives have been like the past couple of years. It's been actually 4 years this December. I keep saying 3.5 years because he was detained for 3.5 years. But this December was my husband's fourth anniversary because he was arrested on Human Rights Day. And, you know, it's been like that for 4 years. I mean, we go through the court, we wait for a decision. It's a roller coaster of emotion all the time. And the first couple of years were all bad. We kept getting negative decision after negative decision, especially the reasonableness issue when the federal court decided that the certificate against my husband was reasonable because they had reasonable grounds to believe that maybe in the past, present, or future, he might be involved in acts of terrorism. Had had come down with a decision that, yeah, okay, well, you know, the certificate against him is found reasonable. That was one of the toughest decisions that we ever had to go through. You know, I never thought that myself I'd have to go face my husband and tell him, I'm sorry, but they thought that the allegation against you were correct, and now we're moving to the next step, which is deportation. And so we feel like we've been stabbed in the back continuously the past 4 years, except the knife keeps getting bigger and the blade keeps going thicker. It keeps going deeper, and the blade is thicker every time. It's very hard to describe.
Will you be able to participate in the upcoming actions that are happening in early January? Or?
Yes, we are. We'll be showing Alex Trudeau's documentary at Carleton University, and we'll be doing a big lobby day that day with one of the biggest universities in Ottawa. And so we've constantly have been organizing actions, and we have something planned for March also, which will be a very big event in Ottawa. And so we're constantly working and constantly lobbying the government on this issue. So we're working all the time in Ottawa.
Well, thanks very much for joining us today, Sophie.
It was my pleasure. Thanks very much for having me.
Sophie Harkat is living with her husband, Mohammed, in Ottawa. Mohammed is being held under a national security certificate, and he's being held under some of the strictest bail conditions in Canadian history. For more information on the case of Mohammed Harkat and security certificates in general, you can go to the free Mohammed Harkat website. It's www.zerra.net/freemohammed, FREEMOHAMED. That's zerra.net/freemohammed. You're listening to Co-op Radio, CFRO 102.7 FM, and coming up next is the news.
Ziko Mohanganga, Ziko Mohabil, Ziko Mary Ambali, Ziko Arthur Ambali, Ziko Drusilla Chipembere, Ziko Zigomo, Ziko Kwambili. I've been waiting all my life for disciple, disciple singing songs of revolution, the circle. The drums keep ringing louder for the spirit. Awake now, it's love we're bringing in the form of freedom. Come down now, the devil's bleeding. We grow from sea to tree. Me and my people building. Me and my people building. I've been waiting for the one day. Not someday, but today we need something strong to build on. A foundation, a nation of God, giving more than taking. Backs are breaking, oh my people, come on. Share the love you're saving. Stop hazing, life could be amazing. We grow from seed to tree. Me and my people building. Me and my people building. Yeah, sing it one more time. We grow from seed to tree. Me and my people building. Me and my people building. Hi, sugar up, dumpster, out of dumpster, out of dumpster, stack up, stack up. Sugar up, dumpster, out of dumpster, out of dumpster, stack up. Sugar up, dumpster, 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 dumpster. From sea to tree. Me and my people building. Me and Soweto. Me and my people building. Me and Malawi. Ha, 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 ha.
grown from seed to a tree. Me and my people building. Me in Brooklyn, y'all. Me and my people building love. Me in Oakland. One more thing. We grow from seed to tree. Me and my people building. Love. Me and my people building love. Building love. Building. Come on, build with me. Sing. Sugar up, dumpster, add up, dumpster, add up, dumpster, stack up, stack up. Sugar up, dumpster, add up, dumpster, add up, dumpster, stack up, stack up. Sugar up, dumpster, add up, dumpster, add up, dumpster, stack up, stack up. Sugar up, dumpster, add up, dumpster, add up, dumpster, stack up. Clap now. Sugar up, dumpster, add up, dumpster, add up.
Me and my people building. Me in South Africa. Me and my people building love. Building love. Come on, people, we need love. Building love. Building love. Come on, LA, you need love. Building love. Building love. Come on, Black Sunshine, need love. Zico Mo Anganga. Indivuna Ufulu. Akuwela Apa. Akubwela apa, mana wanga chipumbele. Ziko mo kwa mbini. Ziko mo, ziko mo, ziko mo, ziko mo, ziko mo, ziko mo.
And it's time for the news here on Stark Raven. A group of protesters rallied outside the Ontario Attorney General's office earlier today. They've been calling for the release of a First Nations protester who was arrested in Caledonia, Ontario in August. Trevor Miller is a 31-year-old man who is accused of assaulting two members of a TV crew near a disputed land claim site. Miller's supporters say that he has been unlawfully held in jail and charged. Miller says that he is not a Canadian citizen, so Canadian law shouldn't apply to him. The protesters wanted to meet with Attorney General Michael Bryant, but met with someone else from the office instead. Bryant and Ontario's Aboriginal Affairs Minister, David Ramsey, are unwilling to comment on Miller's detention because his case is before the courts. Tensions have been running high over the past 10 months of this dispute between Aboriginal protesters and their opponents. Just this weekend, two men were arrested for attempting to hang Canadian flags near the disputed land. They were arrested for breach of the peace.
The United States Ambassador to Canada won't admit that information causing the deportation and torture of Meher Arar is based on faulty RCMP intelligence. U.S. Ambassador David Wilkins says that the U.S. is keeping Arar on a suspect list because there were several sources that linked him to a terrorist group. Arar is barred from entering the United States or flying over its territory. This in spite of a public inquiry that found Arar has no links to terrorist groups. The RCMP have apologized to Arar. RCMP Commissioner Giuliano Zaccardelli resigned after it was shown that Arar was detained and tortured in Syria as a result of RCMP incompetence. Arar is currently suing the United States government for their role in his ordeal.
Florida Governor Jeb Bush has halted all executions after it took prison officials two times longer than usual to kill a prisoner. Medical examiner Dr. William Hamilton says that the execution of Angel Neves Diaz took 34 minutes. The 55-year-old Diaz was still moving after the first injection and required a rare second dose of lethal chemicals. Dr. Hamilton says the officials inserted the needles into the flesh rather than the veins, where the drugs are supposed to be injected. The use of lethal injection is supposed to render the person unconscious and motionless within 5 minutes. but after 24 minutes, Diaz was grimacing, blinking, and moving his lips as if he were attempting to speak. Dr. Hamilton performed the autopsy and has refused to comment on whether Diaz experienced a painful death. Hamilton says he is waiting for tests from the autopsy to be complete before making a final statement. Florida's governor has created a commission to examine lethal injection in light of this case. The commission will complete its final report by March 1st.
The Iraqi Women's Affairs Minister is calling for an investigation into the conditions for women in prison. Iraqi Minister Fatan Abdurrahman Mahmoud said that women are being jailed in appalling conditions and often without charge. Some of these women are being raped and tortured by their captors. Some government ministries are denying the existence of women in Iraqi jails, while others say that any women that are in jail are kept in humane conditions in special prisons. But nonprofit organizations like Baghdad-based Organization for Women's Freedom say they have proof that women suffer daily humiliation inside Iraqi jails. The NGO says that numerous women prisoners have sought their help and told them stories about suffering severe beatings. Minister Mahmoud said she is encouraging the judiciary to take up the investigation of these problems.
Jordan's king has ordered the closure of the country's most notorious prison. Jaffer Prison is a desert compound located near the capital, Amman. It holds some of the country's top dissidents who have reported abuse and long periods of solitary confinement. The announcement came after King Abdullah met with Jordan's National Center for Human Rights. The organization has been pushing the government to improve prison conditions. Jordan's prisoners have ignited numerous protests and riots in the past 2 years over the poor conditions and ill treatment. And that's the news for this evening on Stark Raven.
Time for some community events, announcements.
Certain Days is presenting their calendar for 2007. It's a calendar about political prisoners and prisoners of war. And this year they've focused on the theme of immigration, and it includes work by many political prisoners and their supporters, including Tom Manning, David Gilbert, Herman Bell, Alvaro Hernandez, Mumia Abu-Jamal, Jeffrey Free Lewers, The Move Nine, The Cuban Five, Gord Hill, Gorby, Just Seeds, and many more contributors in addition to those. And the proceeds will all benefit the New York State Task Force on Political Prisoners, No One Is Illegal in Kingston, and Adamair, which is a Palestinian prisoner solidarity group. So it's been created by the Certain Days Calendar Collective in Montreal. So if you want more information, you can purchase it on their website at certaindays.org. Again, that's certaindays.org. Or if you're in Vancouver, you can contact the Anti-Poverty Committee or No One Is Illegal. And these calendars are selling for $15 for each individual calendar, or if you are a prisoner, they are $9 each.
So Freedonia is a new Canadian organization that provides small grants to support grassroots organizing that promotes radical and democratic social change. The 2007 granting period, they're looking for applications now. So if you're from a group who's creating economic alternatives to capitalism, you can apply. So they're looking for stuff about organizing around economic issues, organizing around alternative economic models, participatory research and development of practical economic alternatives, and building capacity and tools within groups. So the grants can be up to $10,000. So for more information, check out freedonia.ca. That's FreeDonia, freedonia.ca. So that brings us to the end of the show here on Stark Raven. And if you're interested in keeping in touch with us, you can join our email list. We send out one email a month, just one, with information about our upcoming shows, a digest of our recent news, and links to the audio. You can catch our show online and download and listen to it in case you missed one. So if you want to get on the email list, just email us at stark-raven@cooperadio.org. And if you want to check out any of our archives, you can find them at prisonjustice.ca. We're also here after the show. You can call us at 604-684-7561 if you have any ideas or feedback, or you want to join that email list, you can give us a call. Again, it's 684-7561. We are here the first 3 Mondays of each month, meaning we're back on Monday, January 1st, for a New Year's Day special. So just a call out to everyone who's listening and enjoying Stark Raven to remind you that Co-op Radio is a volunteer-run radio station. We're all volunteers here, and it is a community-based station. And so we rely on the support from you, the listener, to keep us on the air. So consider becoming a member of Co-op Radio. So if you want to find out how to do that, you can give us a call after the show at 684-7561. So stay tuned to Co-op Radio. Coming up next is Think Indian, followed by Pajvak, and then Blues in the Dark. But we'll see you on Monday, January 1st.
What's real ain't always right. In the world of struggle and strife, what ends it tight, right. But there's not enough hours in the day or night to make your load light. Seems by every sunrise comes a new surprise. Most of the time costly, more often than not. The financial burden is backbreaking. Stressed out, feel your soul ache. Not much more you can take. About to flip out, go out and get cake. See how many licks it takes to get back quick and then some, because you got young ones and it leaves you so frustrated. But think about if you're incarcerated. Do that or do it. Come on here, baby. Do that or do it. You gotta think about it. Do that or do it. It's real talk. Do that or do it. Sometimes people have too many excuses. Huh. So many excuses make your ass look useless. With nothing on the to-do list. Always down for whatever because your ass is clueless. Going with the flow, but your dough is staying low. Still it crying at your rope, but I can't do nothing for you, folks. You need to go handle your business like you say you been. But there's no evidence or proof in the pud that you been doing what you should. Shit, doing what you could. Fuck it, doing what you must. Nigga, kick up dust. Don't sit stuck and needy. Take care of your responsibilities. See food, clothing, and utilities. Plus all in the between. Know what I mean? You need to go out and just do that or do it. Handle your business. Do that or do it. Take care of your priorities. Do that or do it. Come on. Do that or do it. Huh. Do that or do it. It's real talk, y'all. Do that or do it. Take your time. Do that or do it. Or think about what you're doing. Do that or do it. What's the rules in the land of the free will? Huh. But not all are free-minded. Society's designed it, the media's refined it. Now we find things accepted. The more choices in the decision, the more chance to make a bad one. And I made some here in the world of the money hungry and the selfish. And when it comes down to it, we don't really think about how to make it better as a whole. We just want to show how we can floss, how we a boss. But I be more impressed at businesses. Like if you clocking dirty money, nigga, wash that shit. Put it back and reap the benefits. Gotta fix this shit. Gotta learn how to communicate, learn how to kick it without acting ignorant. Like if you got beef, post dated at the function. Smoke something, because your wrath on his sorry ass is being unleashed on others at peace. Broke bread, got fitted to be wrapped up in your shit's knit. Forget it. Do what you do, but no, it's all on you. Do that.